Hi there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9 coming to you from the Gaelic Athletic Association's Croke Park. Traditionally, when we think about IoT, we think about cool little robots and do-it-yourself kind of things, but we're here to learn today how IoT can actually transform the lives of people in cities and especially in this stadium. They use this as a test bed to learn about how IoT can help them learn about what's going on in the stadium, and also we'll learn about how you too can use IoT to transform the way we do things. I'm here with Suzanne Little, technology lead here at DCU. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm very well.
So tell me a little bit about a smart city. How do you envision what a smart city would be, and what are some of the data implications that you find?
Well, smart cities are fascinating for me because they produce so much data. And I always want data. So a lot of my research is around analyzing the content of images and video. Mm-hmm. And of course, in a true smart city where you have sensors and they're gathering information all the time, images and video and audio are really important parts of that. So that gives me, as a researcher, the opportunity to solve really interesting and exciting problems. So how do people move around a city? What sort of sounds happen? How does traffic behave in different environments? So smart cities for me are interesting problems, but also good sources of data.
So generally, I mean, there's a couple of problems that may or may not happen with this. And one of them that I hadn't considered are, first, the legal implications, and then the technical limitations that are imposed by these legal implications. Why don't you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so one of the unusual problems you come across when you do this sort of work is challenges around data privacy and data protection. So there are legal regulations, they're different in every country, every region, around how long you can store information about people and what you can capture. And this is a serious problem, and there are different ways that we as researchers and developers can approach this. So one of the really new and unique ideas that we have as part of the Smart Stadium project is to look at where we process information. So the concept of edge computing or fog computing within a cloud infrastructure means that we can potentially process CCTV video, for example, closer to the point at which it's captured, hopefully still within the network and the infrastructure of the controller company. So that has a legal implication. By doing that, we can apply our models, our machine learning processes to get tracking information, for example, that's not personally identifying, it's general metadata, and that can then be pushed up to a cloud infrastructure and combined with other data sources to identify unusual patterns of behavior. You know, is this event running smoothly, or is there a pinch point happening? We don't need to see faces to do that. We'd prefer not to have the legal responsibility for that data, so we can do it closer to point of capture.
So I'm thinking of this from a machine learning perspective, because generally when I was trained in machine learning, it was you save all your data and you work on that and then you munge it, but you have to keep all your data. You're telling me now that you can't legally, but then you want to do models that live somewhere on premise and somewhere in the cloud. How are these models, I'm trying to understand how these models are reconciled,
yeah,
and how one would go about this in practice.
Yeah, I mean, this is interesting because what you're describing is really the traditional way that machine learning researchers in labs like mine work. Right? You get a problem, you get a data set, it's got some labels, you train a model, everybody's happy, it works well. The real world doesn't work like that.
Right.
So how do we move from our lab-based research to stuff that is deployable, that is practical? So the Smart Stadium project was partly motivated by that. It gives us this test bed that's small enough to try these things, but large enough to prove them. Now in practice, what that means is we might start with a seed or a sample of data that we work with in a traditional way, and that builds a model. And that model then can be deployed to be tested in that testbed environment. And then as we go on, we're getting the data streams for the non-personalized data, and we can look at then updating the local models based on the information we have. So the new movements in machine learning are really around things like active learning or lifelong learning, where you don't train a model once on a big chunk of data, mm-hmm, and then have it live forevermore. You're dealing with big data, you're dealing with streaming data, and you're dealing with the concept of being able to update those models.
So how do I know, for example, what metadata to keep to send to the larger model versus what needs to be kept there at the smaller? Because I'm imagining like a small model versus a large model, or are they the same model? Help me understand that a little bit.
So I guess the small versus large is probably a good way to start thinking about it, because generally at the point of capture, your computational power is low.
Right.
So you're looking at things like feature extraction, tracklet detection, that kind of quite low level stuff. And then those numbers, those features can be sent up for a larger model that might be pulling information from multiple sources to do something more on the level of scene or event or activity classification across a range of different locations.
Let's get into the actual, because right now I feel like we're talking really high level. Let's talk about what we're trying to do, what you're trying to do at Croke Park. Why don't you tell us about the Smart Stadium project and then how sort of that projects into the Smart City project.
Sure. So the Smart Stadium project is a rich project. There's so many different applications and proofs I can talk about. But one of the really interesting ones we did recently with the help of Microsoft and Intel was to look at how loud is the 16th player. So sometimes they call it the victory cheer, or how loud is the crowd getting. So in that, we have a number of sensors installed in the stadium. So some of those are microphones that measure decibel levels. Some of those are cameras that will record video images. There are water monitors, rainfall gauges, weather stations, some things like that. Those are linked up to Intel Gateway devices that are locally on the Croke Park network. Mm-hmm. And they accumulate data and then send it up as packets to the Azure platform for further processing. Mm-hmm. So in the How Loud is the 16th Player application, the microphones were recording a range of averages every minute. Those packets were being sent to the gateway, which was reformatting them, performing the appropriate security, sending them up to Azure. We were then applying various models, and that was being produced as a Power BI dashboard. We were able to use that during the football finals and semifinals to look at which team was getting the most support at various times during the match.
I love the idea of having this smart stadium as the stepping stone to a smart city. Why don't you talk a little bit about some of the things that you learn in this real environment?
There's all sorts of things that you don't consider. Where is the electricity? How far is it to the nearest internet cable? So there are some really practical installation stuff. You know, when can you book the electrician? These sorts of physical deployment issues that we tend to not consider because we're just dealing with data, mm-hmm. They become something that have to be addressed. One of the interesting things about putting stuff into a real stadium is that it's full of concrete and metal and warm bodies who have multiple mobile phones. And so we had to consider things about connectivity as a team that we hadn't had to think about before. And then for us as researchers, the data is real. So there's occasional packet loss. So we have to interpolate information between data sources.
Yeah.
Right? It's not clean and pretty like you might get when you download an academic data set to play with. And so learning how to overcome things like gaps in data, and learning how in particular to integrate information. So we would generally get a single piece of data and it wouldn't be from multiple places. But in the stadium, we have two microphones on opposite sides of the stadium. They are 60 meters apart. I can't remember exactly what that is in feet or yards. But there's a distance between those. Correlating different things happening in the match, when you've got these two microphones observing the same event, this is really a very, very simple correlation example. So you can imagine extrapolating this out to a smart city where suddenly you've got things in different locations around a block, and maybe you're tracking something that's happening as it moves along a cityscape. That scaling out of stuff where suddenly you have to take into account physical location, where you're looking at delays in events moving from place to place. We wouldn't normally have the opportunity to try these things out. Smart Stadium lets us solve some of those problems, and then we look at how this moves out into a cityscape.
It's an interesting way to start to look at the real implications of putting these things out. Let's talk a little bit more about the CCTV example that you were talking about, mm-hmm. and what that would look like, for example, in Croke Park.
Yeah, so in Croke Park, we've taken a number of steps to look at how video works. So they've very kindly given us samplings from their CCTV, and we've had people working on how we can detect things like the crowd density and how it changes. So how full is an area? And you might think, well, what use is that?
Yeah.
But interestingly, when we did this across a number of cameras, so we had four or five cameras around a concession area, and we looked at, you know, clearly you get a nice big peak of people before the game starts, and it drops off really fast, everyone rushes into their seats. Half time, everyone comes out again to get their food and drink. And then there's sort of a bit of a plateau as they go back in, and we thought nothing of it, but the Croke Park management were actually really interested to see that, because they had never had it quantified that there was this kind of stepping back when people returned for the second half of a match. And they wanted to know, well, why is that? Do we need more staff on the registers? You know, is it that people are not getting served fast enough, so they're still finishing off their food? Because in Croke Park, you can't take your food back to your seat.
Oh.
Well, you can't take alcohol back to your seat anyway. Or is it their team's not performing well and they've stayed out the back to commiserate with each other?
Right.
You know, there's an unknown there for them to look at. So that was one of our initial things. As a researcher in video analytics, this was really interesting for me because traditionally, CCTV footage is not a great data source. It's not meant to be used in this way. It's meant for security. So it's not high resolution. It's generally, you know, low frame rate. It's not in the best position. It's probably got light reflections. It's not great. But because we had access to this in the Smart Stadium project, we could actually demonstrate that we could get some useful data from an existing legacy system. So the next step for us is really to look at, well, right, we've proven we can do it with some legacy stuff. Let's see what we can do with more interesting tools. So together with Intel and Microsoft, we're looking at putting in a specific camera in that same location, wired up to a more powerful gateway. And then we're doing some pre-processing of the video on that gateway, sending that signal up to Azure to be combined to get better event tracking within that.
So that goes a little bit more to the small model, big model. And I wanted to get back to the specifics of how do you actually do that without being identifiable in the cloud. And so that's why I wanted to come back to the CCTV example. There's videos going into the gateway.
Yep.
Something's happening there. And then it's pushing stuff up to the cloud.
Yep.
Something's happening there, and these two things combine. I'm having a hard time understanding what's on the gateway versus what's in the cloud and how you distinguish between the two.
Okay, so there's two different approaches we're taking. The first one is more like your traditional machine learning, whereas what happens on the gateway is the feature extraction.
Okay.
So feature extraction, you take a couple of frames of the video, you identify a key point, so a point of interest within that image, and you track that key point as it moves across the frames.
Okay.
So the pattern of pixels is something that you can identify, and you can identify that as it moves through a video. So when you start to connect those dots, you get a shape, and that's a track.
Okay.
Right? Nothing about the person, you don't need their face, it's just a sequence of numbers. And if you do that across the whole of the video, you get sets of numbers that are the shapes of people moving, and that can be input then to a traditional machine learning approach that classifies, you know, the frequency of the motion, how fast people are moving on average, how many people are there in a scene, because each dot could be interpreted in different ways. But the actual pixels, the visual bit that you and I could interpret, that stays at Croke Park. So all that's going up to the cloud platform are the features and the numbers that are the raw input to the machine learning processes.
I see. Is there something that, because I imagine, and tell me if I'm wrong here, is that you're going to have an initial data set of the real pictures just to come up with some things, and then you're going to be like, okay, we can put this processing on the gateway versus in the cloud. Is that something you did?
Yes, that's the way we're doing it. So you have to start with that seed,
okay. Because
someone at some point has to see, did we get this right?
Mm-hmm.
So you do need access to do that. But that's where we, as partners in the project, have that unique opportunity to do that kind of checking. But then once you start to scale this out and deploy it, you're not having to take that video out of a controlled circumstance. It's not being saved up somewhere else.
So the gateway, if effectually, in essence, is sort of pre-processing for features.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So as I say, that's one way of doing it. That's kind of quite a classical approach, right? There's nothing really interesting about the machine learning in that. Of course, the new hot topic in computer vision is all around deep learning. So convolutional neural networks, so training models to be able to do that. And so that's where, again, this idea of the small and the larger model potentially comes in. And one of the research questions that my team is working on that we're really interested and excited by is, what can we actually do on a gateway to improve processing potentially in the cloud and to reduce the bandwidth of stuff going up? Now, it's really easy to break that apart in a classical one because you can do features on the gateway and feature processing on the cloud. The way in which you do it for a convolutional neural network model is going to be different, right? So maybe we take apart the convolutional model. We train it as you would normally. You give it a really, really large quantity of video and you build up this network, series of numbers. Maybe we can take that network apart and put some of the network onto the gateway.
That's clever.
And then you send up some of the layer outputs. This is ongoing work. This is the interesting stuff that we want to look at.
But that's interesting, though, because then you'd have to actually look at, because if I understand right, and maybe my knowledge is limited, convolutional neural networks have link backs to other things that may or may not span the network somehow. Yeah. How do you... This is why we study things, kids.
Ask me again in a few years' time. Yeah, this is why it's exciting, because they're not particularly well understood, because there are all these really intricate links. How do we pull it apart? Maybe it'll work really well for one aspect of this, and it might break for something else. We'll find out.
Well, and the other question is that notion of training, because the algorithm I remember was like some weird back propagation, and that's not the way it's done in state-of-the-art things. But they rely on, these networks rely on each other for the numerical stability that they need when you're optimizing that. Yeah. How do you do that across such a big boundary?
Yeah, exactly. And the unique opportunity I think we have with this collaboration is that we can try this out. We can try it on something that is semi-realistic.
And I love the idea of having this Petri dish that's not like a Petri dish. It's like the real world.
Yeah.
Croke Park, obviously, there's 80-something thousand
82,300 people.
So it's not like fake data. You're not. And so it's wonderful. So what are you looking forward to in the future with this project?
It's such a wonderful project for coming up with ideas. And I wish I had three of me and 10 of my team to sort of split up and do stuff on it. I think... the multimodal aspect is something that has really interested me for a long time, and I think we've got a good opportunity here to use that. Now, by that, I mean that we would tend to work on a single type of input. So maybe we've got video, maybe at best we've got multiple videos, but ideally what you want to have is some video and some audio and some ticketing data and some location stuff, and then bringing all of those together, we can set up a model of normality. So one of the challenges in training to detect unusual or abnormal events is that by definition, they don't happen very often. Mm-hmm. So traditionally you would label it and say, here is an emergency, send the security guard because there's a fight. Fortunately, they don't happen very often, particularly in Croke Park. And so you can't do that. So what do you do instead? What we can do is take all of these different modes and train something that recognizes that things are moving the way that the system would expect them to move.
I see.
When things start to differentiate from that, the system is able to raise an alert or perform an action based on, you know, how far it's diverting from what it would expect. So I think that's a really interesting opportunity, and it's difficult to do without a stadium like this, because we need to have these different modes of data, but they need to be real. You can't synthesize all of this stuff very effectively.
Well, this is super interesting stuff. Thanks so much for spending some time
with
us.
Thanks, Matt.
We've been learning all about Croke Park and smart cities from a data perspective.